When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
Oh, excuse me. How dare you? So even though we are still like a year and a half away from the midterms, there's apparently already a congressional candidate, a Republican, running against Maxine Waters in California. But the point of this is to say that this guy, his name is Omar Navarro. He publicly dissed Disney's Cruella for making one of its characters openly gay. His exact tweet was, quote, "The new Disney Cruella with Emma Stone just ruined my childhood with an openly flamboyant gay in the movie," which I thought was such a funny way of like just like so openly funny. Flamboyant gay. It's like, what are we talking about? Who are we talking about? Elliot Glazer? Like, give me a break.
Openly flamboyant gay.
And then he continued to say, "Disney persists shoving the LGBT agenda down our throat." So the character The character already is voiced by John McCree. Mm-hmm. And is it the character
the
is
actor.
Apparently
he's an actor. It's not voiced. It's like
Oh, I thought it was a. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's live action,
not an animated thing. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But apparently, the character is apparently gay, but not overwhelmingly so. And John, the actor, describes the character as sort of living a, quote, fabulous lifestyle, but you don't, like, meet a boyfriend or something. Apparently, in one iteration of the movie, the character was a drag queen, but that was subsequently dropped.
Well, and he played, I mean, just to give a little background on the actor who plays him, I believe he was either originated the role or was in the film Jamie, which is a big British musical about a young kid who gets inspired after being bullied or is bullied at school, gets inspired to do drag and become sort of, you know, their amazing self. And that actor was a part of that musical. So he's definitely in the ether as a very much a queer talent and an up-and-coming talent.
Sounds like he should be on the podcast, quite frankly.
Well, I'll DM him right now, excuse me.
Please do, and I'm a little annoyed you haven't already.
He won't respond to me, I'm not famous.
Omar Navarro, he's a real gem. He spent time in prison for stalking his ex-girlfriend, and that's the Republican running.
Yeah.
He's also running against Maxine Waters in one of the most Democratic districts in the entire country.
Yeah,
so it's kind of,
she's gonna reclaim her seat.
Yeah, right. I guess it's just like trying to make noise or whatever. Are you guys, but sidetrack, or maybe perhaps the real discussion is, are you going to see Cruella? I'm oddly obsessed with female villains, and I'm kind of excited.
Am I going to see? We had this discussion last episode about Disney gays. I purchased Cruella at 12:01 a.m., the day we could purchase it, and I watched it. I'm obsessed Cruella. I love 101 Dalmatians. I love Cruella de Vil. She's my favorite villain. She's like, literally, there's an outfit that I'm wearing to Disneyland next with our guest coming today. I'm going to Disneyland with Alaska. And I have an outfit planned that is Cruella de Vil inspired. I am obsessed with Cruella.
Yes. We liked it. You liked the movie.
I love the film. Good. I love the film. I've watched it twice. It is a fantastic
That was a reserved review, but yeah.
I will see it. I want to see it. I think I'll go to Allen's and watch it there. I think I do want to see it. It looks really fun, and I like there's a take on it.
Yeah.
It seems cool. Elliot, just say, Venmo me some money and I'll rent it or something.
Who are
your
favorite female villains? I love female villains.
I was obsessed. Remember the Superman that had like the three bad guys and one of them was women and one of them was a woman and she had like really shortly cropped hair. Mm-hmm. I was obsessed with her.
You know who you would like then, if you like the whole Superman villain moment, is in Supergirl or Superwoman. I forget what it was called.
You already lost me.
Faye Dunaway plays like the Lex Luthor-esque character of the film.
Oh, interesting.
And it is so campy good. There's a scene with a carousel that has Brenda Vaccaro in it as well. She's like Faye's right-hand person or whatever. And there's a great campy moment where Faye does something with a circus thing, and then Brenda has a really great line where she's like, "Didn't know you could do that." Like, it's just so good.
Yeah,
it's just so
good. Also, it's very funny because one of my recent YouTube rabbit holes has been specifically Faye Dunaway signing autographs because she's such a bitch. And like there's like my favorite clip. There's this guy who asks for an autograph, and if she doesn't like the picture, she says no. And she's like, no. And she moves on. He goes, can I please just get a picture of her? And she like just looks at him and then like looks away and like moves on.
Have you heard the voicemails? There's a YouTube.
Oh, yes.
Voicemail. Yes. We should just put that. I'm going to put that into this episode right now.
Call received 6:14 a.m. Thursday, February 27th.
Yeah, Jack, this is Faye Dunaway. Look, I've erased some of the stuff from the O'Neill interview, but I'm not really interested in Terry O'Neill. He's a big, big liar, and I'm really not interested in him. And, you know, or in dilly-dallying and tarrying over Mommy Dearest. I don't even want to discuss it in my interview. Or on this Lloyd Webber thing. Those are negative. And I notice that you have nothing in about Marlon Brando. You have nothing in about Johnny Depp, which I did two films with. I don't expect you to get him for an interview. But you can put some footage in of the Costa Rica movie, which I was brilliant in, and it was not well sold in this country. You can talk about the Marlon Brando film that I was wonderful in. All the positive things along that period. The Marlon Brando film was going on at the same time that the Lloyd Webber stupidity was going on. And you all have to put in the Lloyd Webber stupidity. You can't put in that I worked with the wonderful Marlon Brando and talked to the director of that movie, for Christ's sake. And I'm not going to approve it. I'm really upset now because that, for two nights now, tried to thread through that stupid interview with a man that I will not even waste my time discussing. And you know, who, suffice it to say, stopped working when he married me and pretended to be my manager for a very long time. So let's not even go there. It's very upsetting to me. And then to put our child in jeopardy the way he had. So I'm not interested in these negative things that you all are putting in there at the end. I don't want Lloyd Webber in. I'd like you to cut him out. And I'd like you to really trim down everything to do with that Mommy Dearest. I'm not going to talk about it. Maybe one thing I'm going to say about it, and that's all. It's just like, you know, an obsession. Why can't you be obsessed about positive things, about Marlon Brando, about the Costa Rica movie that was the hit of all of Europe and Cannes, about the film I did with Brando and talk to that, you know?
The voicemails are so good, and I watch the YouTubes of them probably once a month. Like,
I know.
They're just,
I know.
She is the ultimate female real-life villain, and she didn't
ever
mean to
be. Yeah, she really is.
But
she really is.
What's really funny about this, too, is that this is literally how much we care about Omar Navarro dissing
Luis Manuela. We ended up
remember Faye Dunaway?
Not even joking.
So our guest on the podcast today is this up-and-coming drag superstar. She's going to be a drag superstar. She really is getting her wings in sort of what her drag character is and where she's going. I'm really excited to introduce you guys, literally introduce you guys for the first time, Alaska Thunderfuck. Congratulations.
Oh, hey. And introducing Alaska Thunderfuck. I love
that. Now, let's do a little tip walk around, you know, get
right.
the people going. Get the people going.
I'm just doing it for tips tonight. Thank you for the opportunity.
Can I ask real quick?
I know what question
is. You know what's coming. Alaska, when you started, I went to a drag show in real life for the first time, really kind of ever.
My drag show.
Alan's drag show was amazing. But as a comic, obviously you're used to getting on stage and performing, and then you get off stage and you get nothing out of it. And then I see you guys walk around with these buckets of money. I'm like, how much do they make? And I instantly was like, I need to start just carrying a wig with me to bars and like doing drag so I can make like $30. How much did you make when you first started? doing shows like that?
Well, nothing, but it really depends on it depends on the bar, it depends on the plays. Yeah. But no, drag queens aren't fucking dumb. We work stealing money literally out of your hand into our act.
Right.
I think there's an opening for comedians to start doing it. Just put on a Donna Summer song and walk through the audience and make people give you dollars. Yeah.
I have to say, Brent, you do make more money. I mean, this is strange, but at least maybe it was just the places I've been doing it. But like at Executive Suite that night, I walked away with like $400, which is like,
oh my god,
at a stand up set, I would get maybe 50, 100, if that, right, for a spot. You know what I mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Orinoco Ho.
Yeah.
That's Brent's drag.
That's my drag persona. But also, just let it stand on the record that Alan only got $2 from me. But yep. Anyway, $400 nonetheless.
And I fell hard that night. They were witness to the falling, Alaska. I think I texted you about it.
You told me all about it, but you know what? A fall will get you more tips.
It's true. It's so true.
It really will.
The lesbians
people are like,
who picked me up, they gave me like 20 bucks.
Yes, because mm-hmm. Oh, people really are like, funny. I have fallen down in my life too sometimes, but you got back up.
Well, you know, let me also ask you a question. I don't know if this is considered like gauche or something or inappropriate. Have you, Alaska, when was the last time you fell in heels? I mean, does it ever happen to you anymore?
Luckily, like part of my aesthetic is mm-hmm. being right. sort of teetering on the edge of always right, right. falling. So if I do fall down, it's not really very surprising because it's sort of like you're waiting for the thing to fall down. Like you're yeah, it's inevitable.
Right. That's very
true. I hope that's gonna be true of my drag. I really do. That just me falling is just a part, like it's gonna happen, guys. So like just waiting for the fall will be
yeah,
part of the
it's
appeal.
It's a matter
of my
where
drag.
It's placed in your act. That's right.
Alaska, you have a new song out. Name of it, it's Roy G, how does it go?
Roy G Biv.
Roy G Biv BBT.
Yeah, right. Rainbow got me feeling alive. All the colors of your body got me feeling alright. All the colors of the rainbow got me coming to life, to life, to life. You give me life, bitch. Roy G. Biv B B T. Roy G. Biv B B T. Yeah, Roy G.
When making a catchy pop song, make it a really difficult sequence of letters to remember. That's what I always say.
I know. I knew I was going to fuck up the letters. That's why I didn't say it.
No one knows the name of it, but you know what? I don't care because I got to perform it for the first time in
How
Erie.
Was that?
And you never know, like, when you do a new song. And I'm like, this song is so fucking fun to perform. So I'm like really excited just to go out. Like, there's speaking assertively over a techno beat. Check. That's what I love. I also get to sing in it. And I say, you give me life, bitch. And then it's so good.
You are really good at crafting like dialogue for a song. Like that is like kind of your thing. Yeah, I'm always amazed at how you can like, because I need a rhyming book just to like put a sentence together for like a song. I can't work. It sure. stresses me out. The yeah, poetry yeah. of writing. How do you do it?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't do this alone, and thank mm-hmm. God for the other writers on the track who sort of like laid the groundwork, and then like I knew how I wanted the chorus to sound, but like really the spoken parts, like that was a team effort on this one. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, when I wrote This Is My Hair, I had this track and I didn't know what to do with it, and then I smoked marijuana and then it was like, there it is.
who do you like to work with when you put your, or if you work with people, who do you like work with on putting these songs together?
Well, I've worked with Killingsworth forever, like since my first album. So like Tomas and Ashley are amazing over there. And for Roy G. Biv, we used the services of Toby Marlowe as well, who is really, really brilliant, talented, and fierce.
Do you come up with, like you said, you know the chorus. Like, is there like something that you start with that you're just like, it needs to have something like this, and then they kind of work around that and sort of they work off of that?
Yeah. Nick Laughlin came up with the idea. He was like, you have to do a Pride song called Roy G. Biv. So
Nick on Instagram is incredible, by the way. We have to give a shout out to her.
Girl, she's
so good.
She's representing the house of extraneous extrosity at all times. At all times.
I've always been fascinated with the songwriting process and like how
same
that it's just so foreign to me, and how like that first nugget will even pop into your head, and how you know that that's, you know, something to work from, and mm-hmm. I find it fascinating. I'm always very
there's this lyric that has always stuck with me that starts, American Airlines had the prettiest planes.
That's right, from the Broadway smash hit Come From Away, which is a Broadway show.
What a beautiful opening line of a song. American Airlines had the prettiest planes. It's not clunky.
It's a musical about 9/11, Alaska. About 9/11.
But it's the least interesting story of 9/11 because it's about layovers in Canada. But anyway, we've heard all about it.
But yeah, now, sorry, Alaska, I also... No, in terms of music, too, like... I would say that you are one of the more, I guess, like, when I think of, like, drag queens who release music and it's, like, really good, I think of you, I think of Shea Coulee, mm-hmm. you know, what?
RuPaul,
mm-hmm. of course. Yeah. But I feel, people joke about RuPaul's music, but it does, you know, it's like you and Shea Coulee, and I think Monet probably too, but, like, mm-hmm. what differentiates for you? And is it even a conscious thought when you're writing songs or releasing music, that you treat it more like, I guess, an actual song than like a novelty thing? Because I know, like, sometimes it would just be like drag queens who were voted out of Drag Race that night will set up some sort of like novelty song to drop on YouTube the night they're let go from the show. Mm-hmm. But yours is elevated, and I wonder if that's like a conscious decision on your behalf.
Are you consciously elevated?
Right. I don't know. Well, no.
Are you trying to the music is good, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I wonder how cognizant you are of wanting it to be more than just novelty music, or like, you know, to line up with something with Drag Race.
Right. And that was the concern when we did the first album, Anus.
Anus.
When we did that album, that was my concern. I was like, is this even gonna be music? But like, luckily, you know, Killingsworth and the producers that I've gotten to work with are really fucking good, and so the music itself is very well produced. Mm-hmm. And so I can be like, I can sing about stupid shit like hair and nails. Yeah. And, you know, fingernails and makeup, but the like production elevates it, and
I like sophisticated,
I like diving into like the stupidity of it. I think I come at it very from outside in, and I'm like when I wrote Your Makeup is Terrible, it was because I had a t-shirt that said Your Makeup is Terrible, and I was like, I need a song that matches the t-shirt.
Right.
So we can sell more t-shirts.
right. You know, that's an interesting point that you make, and it's something that I've noticed in dating in Los Angeles. There are lots of, you talked about producing in music. Uh-huh. There are lots of starving artists, and you see, obviously, non-famous actors, and you see non-famous comedians and all these things. And a lot of times, you know, you look into their work, sometimes they suck, sometimes they're really good. But I have noticed when it comes to music, without like the people who are like, I'm a musician, I'm a pop star, you know, aspiring pop singer, without like teams of people that really work with a song to help produce it and, you know, bring out the beat or out of fucking whatever, however you would do it.
Pump out the beat.
It sounds so amateuristic almost every time. I've never come across like sort of, you know, an aspiring pop singer who clearly made a song in their room that was even close to good.
Mm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like, isn't that that's Billie Eilish's career, is that she came up with music in her bedroom and then it made an album and she whispered.
She and her brother did.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that that's possible. I mean, but perhaps that's why she's monumentally successful right now, and that she had sort of an eye for this stuff. And we also know that no one at any point touched it. It was like literally exactly that and recorded in her room.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I am feeling a bit inspired right now. And Alaska did mention that she sometimes gets inspiration while enjoying a cannabis moment. So I was thinking, since our podcast is sponsored by Can, what is it, Brent? A refreshing, what's the slogan? There's a slogan here. Oh, simple, all natural ingredients. It's refreshing cannabis beverage, low calorie.
It's a social tonic.
It's a social tonic,
and it's low cal. And what more do you want with life?
Well, what you want more with life is THC and CBD, which it's infused with.
Right.
Well, so let's, we could probably like take a drink of this, and then maybe each of us can probably come up with an amazing like beat or song for a new track. I think that's going to happen. If it worked for Alaska, okay, it's going to work for us.
Okay. All right.
I'm so excited. You sent me these and I haven't tried them yet. This is my first time. And I'm going to pop it open.
Ooh.
Wasn't it hard to open? It's a little hard to open.
Wow, I can't believe you opened it so easily. Everyone has a takes a minute.
How are your nails?
I actually love the novelty of opening it. I think they're great.
Do I keep pulling it? And
you rip off that small part and then
slides.
It slides.
Wow,
that is elegant.
Yes.
Wait, which one are you drinking, Alaska? Which one do you have? I have the blood orange cardamom.
Amazing. This is the grapefruit rosemary.
That's what I have too.
We'll let you drink first because you're the guest. Yeah. So you drink first. Hutton, give us your, what song are you feeling right now? What track, what chorus do you feel?
Oh my gosh. Ooh. Oh, that flavor is so nice. So wait, I'm not going to get wasted from this.
No, it's a little light sensation.
Yeah.
It's
2 milligrams of THC. Okay. I'm a lightweight though, so that'll be lovely.
Yeah, me too.
And I think you're going to write a new song tonight.
Mm-hmm. It's very possible.
The prettiest planes.
Ooh, I just
it's
had
good
the,
right here. Let
I just had my
it.
Blood orange, and so far I feel like I feel like body yaddy yaddy moment, but I can't do that because that song's already been done.
You know what? Let me make up a song off the top of my head right now. Here we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm inspired by Can. Da 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 da. I just made that up.
Wow!
I have a lyric.
I have a lyric I just made up too. He lives downstairs and it's understood. No one gets that lyric? It's from Charles in Charge, guys. Mm-hmm. It's from Charles in Charge. It was an actual lyric to a theme song.
I loved that theme song.
That is the creepiest line of a theme song in the history of television. He lives downstairs and it's under... What's understood?
I don't know.
Especially thinking of Scott Baio now. Ooh, it's not understood. Ooh, Elliot, what's rough. Yours? What flavor do you have?
Try it.
I'm drinking the cranberry sage.
Delicious.
Yum.
Oh,
it is so good.
So, Alaska, Can is one of our sponsors for Pride and of the podcast in general. And you, of course, have done many prides over the years. You performed at Pride probably all across the world. Since we're kind of living in a sort of half post-pandemic life, are you performing at Prides this year? And like, are you getting back on the road?
I was in Pittsburgh yesterday and apparently there was like a Pride march happening and I had no idea. So it's like Pride is happening. Pride is happening every day. I think I'm doing, when is LA Pride happening?
I think it is, maybe. I heard people talking about it yesterday.
I don't think we're doing a parade, but I think they're doing, like, social events or something.
Yeah.
They're doing social events, but they're not doing the, like, full-on Pride March parade, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I have no idea, but I know that I'm going to places where there will be people.
There will be people, and so they will be looking at you. Yeah.
And I've done we did the Britney Blackout show in Brooklyn, and it was the first like real thing for a lot of people coming back to life, you know.
What was that like for you?
Well, it was amazing and touching and inspiring, but it was also like, oh, we're all going to get shit wasted this year, aren't we? Because people, it goes from, it's like everyone is just turned up to a level 20 because we've been, you know, locked up tight for a century of lonely nights.
Do you find that people, especially at events, I found this at like different events or different shows or whatever, people really want to hug for like long periods of time that is actually uncomfortable for me.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
They don't want to let go. I had someone just earlier where someone hugged me and I was like, I love you and all. Like, I enjoy hugging you. I enjoy you as a person. Yeah. But this is too much hugging. Like, I get it was a long year and everything, but you have Instagram.
You're like, could we do this over Zoom, actually? Now, I have Stockholm syndrome with Zoom. Now I want to go back. I want to go back.
Did you perform on a lot of Zoom? You performed on my Zoom show this year. Did you perform on a lot of other Zoom shows?
A little bit here and there, like especially toward the beginning. It was like we set up the living room floor like it was the fucking Johnny Carson show, and like did shows on the bedroom floor, and it was like really fun and amazing. But like, I'm ready to like stand up again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what is Pride like in Pittsburgh? I'm curious. I love Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Well, it usually is like a big deal, and they do it. They have done it in the past, like a big thing, and they bring somebody in. They bring in Deborah Cox or Martha Wash or, you know,
Diane Wiest. Yes.
Love you. She'd be a great Pride gig.
She would.
But this year it's different because, you know, pandemonium changed everything, and so now it's like Pride is kind of happening all month, which is like cool in its own way.
And exhausting and overwhelming in its own way, maybe.
Yes, very much so. You also go ahead, Brett.
Oh, go ahead. No, go Alan.
You also had your comedy special come out, which it was supposed to come out a while ago, but then the pandemic kind of got in the way of that, right? Like, you filmed it before the pandemic.
Yes. So long a while ago. Yeah. Luckily, some jokes are timeless.
Oh my god!
It's stand up. Had you done stand up before? Like, is that some? Because I've always found you to be like a strong stage presence, personality on stage. But like, stand up felt like something kind of new ish for you. Did you like doing it?
Yeah, I did. And I mean, it wasn't really stand up because I was cheating. I had a teleprompter. Like, I wrote a bunch of jokes. I took all the jokes out of my joke file in my phone and put them in a teleprompter and then put on a funny wig and just stood there and...
Smitty, give me my joke file. That's what I
yes!
Bring me my joke file. I gotta get some jokes out there.
Very that. We did it and it was fun. I have so much respect for y'all, for comedians who are able to go up there with just like yourself and a microphone and just like be fucking hilarious. That's a skill that I respect a lot.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you. You know, let me ask you this, because you have done so many different prides. Is there one that stands out to you as like sort of the ultimate pride? That might not be in the city you would expect, like New York or LA or something.
Where was it? There was this one. I can't even remember where it was, but it was like really fun. And Peoria. Then
I can, and, well, while you think of it, I could just jump in here by saying that Brent and I went to Venice Pride.
Oh yeah.
I think a few years ago, and it was like
it was too hot for me. I wouldn't go.
Oh right.
No, really? That was the most fun I've ever had at Pride because it was. It was dark. It was like empty. There was like one person dancing. You know, it was like very sparse. And I was
sounds like
you're
explaining
this.
The CBS in Hollywood. Dark, one person dancing.
And we got pizza by the beach, and that's what we did the whole time for Pride. Like we went to a gay bar for like 10 minutes and we left.
That sounds amazing.
I loved it. I loved it.
I have never been a fan of Pride. I mean, I like Pride. I support Pride. I love the existence of Pride. I do. Yeah. I do agree with, we talked about this last week, but not having a large police presence. I think more organizations should be up front. I think more trans people should be up front. I think I agree with all of the changes that are happening in Pride. But Pride needs to be in the winter months, needs to be in like November, like December. Like, I would really love.
I would love that.
I would love a Pride in a cold month. I'm not going to, literally today we went out to a little outside thing with Elliot And I'm literally fatigued from the sun. I'm fatigued.
I know.
I'm actually tired, which is like, what? I mean, I don't know if that's just me getting old, but like, no more summer. I'm done.
Yeah, I agree.
Sign the petition. Move Pride to November.
You don't understand. If we could have Pride, like it's the Thanksgiving Day parade, where we're all in like parkas and it's like freezing out and you just want to like get out, that would be beautiful to me. Winter Pride.
I almost can't envision a suggestion to improve Pride that would be less popular than what we're talking about
exactly.
right now.
That's why it's so funny.
It's so funny to imagine even our listeners just literally rolling their eyes and being appalled at us right now.
They would rather have police there than have it be in December. Like, that's, where we're at. Well, Alaska, before we wrap this up, I do want to talk to you about Race Chaser, because it is literally one of the most popular podcasts, more popular than ours. Shut up. Fuck you. literally one of the most popular podcasts out there. It's insane. And you guys do, you and Willem do two episodes a week. You do one recapping a episode of Race Chase or Drag Race, but then you also do a Hot Goss, which is actually my favorite one of the week. Like, I love the Friday Hot Goss episodes. Are you surprised at how popular Race Chaser got?
No, I'm not surprised, because it's based off of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is the most popular television show like on the planet at the moment. Or at least they've won the most Emmys. It was really great timing, and it was a really like natural thing to do, because what do drag queens do? We all watch Drag Race and then we sit around and we talk about it. Like, if you put us in a room together, it's not 5 seconds goes by before, what did you think of her gown this week? Oh my god, those boots. Yes, girl.
Or they talk about the edit.
Oh, the edit. Exactly. It's what we do. So it was like a natural resource already, that something we were doing already. And so we just did it.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's fascinating to me, too, that like we've talked with you and other, I think, queens from the show about how, you know, how outspoken the fandom is. But I don't think it was until like even more recently that I really understood. I think from seeing it through Michael Brambilla's perspective as a designer for so many contestants on the show, Alan's boyfriend, and just Alan as well. Like, just, I didn't understand that the fandom could actually change the course of the show in a way that is so significant. I don't know what else. I don't really know what other media products or TV shows are so actually affected by the fandom.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah, they're wild. The fandom doesn't stop. They do not. And nothing gets by them. And now...
Nothing
gets by them. It's like, we noticed that little clip you did with the editing on that on episode 3. We know. We know what you're up to.
Right.
I genuinely can't believe it. But I mean, I guess it makes sense. I didn't really understand. It really was the sort of, to me... Monet versus Tamisha Iman thing that I couldn't really wrap
What's
my head around.
What's your take on that, Alaska? Because we asked who do we ask? We asked Meatball about that last week.
Meatball.
What's your take on that?
I don't really know enough about it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's our job to sit on a microphone and talk about the things we see on TV. And so I can understand how someone could get their feelings hurt if I say something shitty. So I try to not say shitty stuff, but I still do sometimes. Because I'm a shitty faggot. Right.
What's one thing from either your season or the All-Star season that you won? Spoiler alert, you won. All-Stars 2. Spoiler alert. That like the fans reacted in one way, and you actually think that they were wrong about. You know what I mean? Like, you know how a lot of times they'll have the fan reaction to La La Ri's outfit, the one with the bags and stuff. Like, is there a reaction of something that you did on the show that you think people just got colossally wrong, that they were wrong about and reacting the way they did?
No. They were all right. They're always right. No, because it's like whatever the show says happened. happened. Mm-hmm. That becomes the Bible. That becomes the truth.
That's
the
so
truth, the way, and the light. So I don't.
In terms of,
it, as far as the things that I did, no, like it all happened. It all happened.
Yeah.
And in terms of the fandom, like I just wonder. I've been to, you know, I love to frequent like weirdo craft fairs and like, yes, you know, pop art flea markets or whatever. Yes. I love that shit. And I have definitely come across like, you know, pins and bumper stickers or whatever, stickers with like some Drag Race paraphernalia. And there's always like really fun Alaska ones. And I'm wondering like, what is the strangest fan-made item that you have seen, because we know that they come in the forms of stickers and pins and t-shirts and stuff, but there's got to be something weirder out there.
To me, it always, the tattoos are what really get me,
right? Like, yes, that. I follow an Instagram called Drag Queen Tattoos because I'm always astounded and fascinated to see who's made an impact on somebody enough to get it tattooed on their body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that, and it makes me like oh well, okay. Well, I better keep going. I better keep doing drag.
Yeah, right. How could it not? How could it not?
And by the way, do we know, can we fact check this? Or do any, has have any of our listeners gotten an Orinoco Ho tattoo?
Oh. Let us know.
Not quite yet.
Well, Alan asked the Instagram. And I Alaska, will. Thank you so
thank
much.
You. This did you enjoy amazing. The canned beverage?
Yeah. I did. I'm going to be wrecked. 2 milligrams is like a lot for me.
Yeah. I know.
I've seen Brent knock back, was it 4 in one sitting?
I think did 3. I've done 3, but I usually 3. Do 2. And 2's like the perfect buzz for me.
Yeah.
Wow. Our friend Alex mm-hmm. knocked back 4 in one
I'm
sitting.
I'm pretty light. I'm with Alaska. I can't do more. Yeah. I literally have to sip this.
I do
night.
One.
Yeah, I can't
I
do
sip
it.
One. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't.
It's nice though. I like
it's
it.
Very nice. Yeah. It's very nice. It's very nice.
So glad to
well,
hear that.
Well, thank you so much, Alaska. So everyone go listen to Race Chaser, watch the comedy special and listen to the new song. Go to Spotify or wherever you listen to music, right?
Yeah, and there's a music video too.
It's and Michael made one of the bodysuit, right?
Yes, the Roy G. Biv rainbow yeah. bodysuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
was so great.
Yeah.
I love so it. Great. Well, we love you, Alaska. Thank you so much. And
thanks, Alaska. Yeah.
I love you too, honey. Thank you so much.
And another thing.
So, it is Sorry, Pride Month.
What's Pride Month? Wait, what? Brent had a song in the last segment about Pride. Brent, do you want to sing that song?
How did it go again?
Ba da ba 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 da ba da ba da
da da da da da. I hate Pride. I hate Pride. Yeah, da 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 da. That's right.
Well, because it is Pride Month, you know, and we all have our own respective responses to Pride. I mean, I'm glad it exists, but I can find it exhausting. But you know, whatever. We've talked about that plenty of times on the show. I thought it'd be worthwhile to have an earnest attempt to think about moments and parts of queer life that you actually do take pride in. And so I can start. This is like a sharing circle. I take pride
you have
in
stick.
I have yeah, the
right,
stick
right.
What I take pride in about like being gay and queer culture is I like the ability to escape the pressure to marry and have kids on a timeline. Mm-hmm. I think it's very difficult for straight women in particular, and it doesn't matter how woke, you know, with it, or, you know, how progressive they are. I think it affects everybody somewhat equally.
Yeah.
Where that pressure is so inherent, and it happens from day one, even in the most progressive environments, that they have to get married and have kids, and there's a timeline and there's a biological right. clock ticking.
Right.
And so I appreciate and take pride in the fact that we get the chance to potentially skip around that a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously not
yeah.
gay marriage
that's
passing.
A,
it's
I think
different,
that's a good point.
Yeah. So that's that. And then I also will add the sacrifice of our elders is something I definitely take pride in a Larry Kramer-esque way where I want to scream at young people who don't pay attention to those that came before them. But we had that guest, I'm forgetting his name, but Alan, he's the great dude, the writer.
Elliot's like, respect your elders. Is he's like, what's that guy's name again?
Oh, what's his name, Alan?
No. His name is Mark King. Mark S. King.
Mark.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Mark was wonderful because a point that he made that so resonated with me was that I was basically like, why don't young gay people pay attention to those that came before them? And he was like, it's not their response. He's like, I don't, he's like, we, he said, we went through like enough shit. Mm-hmm. And if that means that I don't have to bestow that to somebody else, then that's fine by me. And yeah. I was like, okay, yeah, understood. Yeah. So I appreciate that and take pride in understanding the sacrifice, but also someone like Mark's opinion that you don't have to necessarily harp on all the awful things that came before you.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other thing for me is, I enjoy a lot of gay music, you know, I know like these songs come out and I don't mean like Bette Midler and
you're talking Cher, Avril Lavigne or who are we talking?
No, about? I'm talking like these people that like gay people listen to first, you know, like Kim Petras or like,
or Bette Vincent Midler, Cher.
Sure, sure. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. But like, I'm thinking like now, but like Dua Lipa or whatever, like these people that gays warm up to first before Madonna even, they introduce them to the rest of the world. I take pride in that.
Yeah.
So
that's a good list. Alan, you can go.
Okay.
Actually, no, mine's more pessimistic, so I'll go because we don't want to end on a positive note.
Yeah.
Elliot asked the question, you know, obviously, what do you take pride in? And I said, quote, tough one. And I generally like I like and appreciate the politics of the gay community.
Generally their politics.
Their like, politics.
As if like you're not a part of the community.
I like their politics. I like that most gay people are even obviously outside of being pro gay rights. I think they generally have compassion for the downtrodden. I've never gone on a date with like a stone cold conservative in my life, I don't think. And I really like and appreciate that. Overcoming adversity on an individual level, I think is really impressive as well. That almost every gay person has to do when they come out. But I guess individual contributions from gay people to society are innumerable. But I celebrate those people as people and not as facets of a gay culture in which I take pride. I almost couldn't think of anything about the community as a whole that you can't find in other communities as well that I uniquely take pride in, except for the two things that I mentioned. So shoving that back in your face, Elliot, is what I'm trying to say.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's also appropriate for our podcast.
For what?
For this podcast, to be like, I'm not quite sure.
All right. Well, I mean, it fits the roles we kind of like when we were even pitching this podcast to places and things, like to people, like we kind of fit these different roles in different ways within the community where like I'm definitely the more flamboyant, you know, really gay one. Elliot kind of straddles two worlds and Brent.
Really?
And Brent, you're kind of a bit pessimistic about some things within the gay community.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
And I think that's what's so amazing about sort of queerness is that like we can exist within we're not sort of linear. We can exist in a really different faceted sort of group of people coming together to be friends who look at the community in different ways. I think that's a really important thing and we need more of that in the gay community. For me, what I sort of love about pride and what I love about just sort of being queer is that I actually struggle because there's so many different things that I love, but I do love that we can be a bit more forward-thinking sexually in terms of gender identification and so many things that, for me, like, I find it really refreshing when I can be in a circle of queer people and I don't have to necessarily feel like I have to subscribe to one way of existing. And you know what I mean? I can dress any way I want. Mm-hmm. And I've always been sort of a more flamboyant dresser. And it took years to get confidence to be able to dress the way I like to dress and to know what I like and how I like to present myself to the world. And sometimes it's more feminine, sometimes it's more masculine. And I like that dance that I think straight people aren't socially allowed to make. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now that said, I must recognize that like I am a very privileged person in that I do live in an urban center where it is allowed for me to be able to do that. People who live in communities where it is not necessarily allowed to express yourself in that way. And I recognize that privilege and I hope that people in those communities are able to express themselves in different kinds of ways that make them happy. But then on top of that, the other thing that I love about being queer is we just do entertainment better than anybody else. We really do. If you look back at history, queer people just like understand film, television, books. Yeah. I mean, I think
it queer people. Yeah. Gore Vidal.
I think queer I mean, but I do think queer people, not only in terms of being artists, but also the reception of culture, we take and we shift it in ways that like popularize it with straight people that allow, which is why RuPaul's Drag Race is such a big deal, because we took it and we were like, this is important, this is a thing, and then straight people went and ran with it. And we do that with a lot of different things. Elliot mentioned Madonna. Like, we do it in a lot of different ways where we just get it early on, and and straight people then realize it's online dating. We knew that was a big thing early on out of necessity, and then straight people just up and ruined it. Like,
that's another good point.
Yeah. That,
you know, look, you're making perfectly fair points. But what's crazy to me is Elliot didn't include the last thing on his list, the last thing he's proud of when it comes to the gay community. Buttholes. I'm shocked. Elliot, how did you not read that out?
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's podcast?
I just sent Omar Navarro $25 for a t-shirt. Oh, you bitch.
My aunt Joanne would say, we had Bette Midler first. What about Aunt Anne?
No, I do not want Anna Navarro to run for Congress. I want her to stay on The View on Fridays.
I love Anna Navarro. Oh, my God.
And I love Aunt Joanne.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Elliot Glazer.
Was it Anne or Aunt? Yeah.
His is Anne, and mine is Joanne.
We're losing it. Elliot brings us to a picnic one day, and we're losing it at the end of the day. We can't think straight.
I'm so tired. We are.
I'm exhausted.
Standing and being in the sun for like an hour and a half.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm exhausted.
Wait, Alan, just say your fucking name.
I'm H. Alan Scott.
Oh, great. Elliot's going to be furious.
We're not peppy.
I said the F word. He's literally going to come over tonight and like beat the shit out of me. I'm going to have like a black eye.